like to convene the committee with the weather. We may have some people arriving a little bit late. We did get some phone calls, especially from southeastern Minnesota, that folks are running late. So we'll just play that part of it by ear, but we do want to get started. Because my intent is to adjourn at 11:30, and I've asked the commissioner of MMB to do his presentation, and I would appreciate if members, if you have a question, we'll make a note of that, but we'll try to get through the agenda so that, oh, we do have a quorum. Okay, so we're all set. We'll take questions after the presentation. One thing that I do want to announce, question of change orders. Commissioner, I gave you a heads up that that would be a question I'd be asking, but to make it a matter of public record, I have a history when I've played similar roles in the past as we only view a change when we get an official change order from MMB or back in the days when you were commissioner or we had the Department of Finance. Sometimes state agencies will view a potential change or, quite honestly, even sometimes a governor. Mm-hmm. And unless that goes through MMB so you can monitor that, I think we should have an understanding that that's not an official change until it comes out with your signature. So if you want to comment or...
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Management and Budget. Let's start on the process because I think it is an important process so that the legislature knows what the governor has proposed, what the numbers reflect, and then throughout the legislative session, you know, there's always changes going on. But really, the governor puts forward a package on day one, and sometimes he'll want to change it because new information comes to light, he has a change in mind, there's an opportunity, and what we have done in the past, and I agree, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the opportunity to put it on the record, is that we would submit a formal transmittal letter under my signature saying, amend the governor's recommendations on these items for these amounts so that it can be reflected in legislative tracking, and that is the new sort of amended portion of the governor's package. Even if nothing else happens, usually after the February forecast, the governor makes some recommendations to rebalance his budget, and so that would be certainly the one time for sure that you would see something coming from us.
Okay, and then the other thing, members, you should have the presentation in your packets, and the intent of the meeting today now is to get a broad overview. The intent is not to get into the detail. That will be the role of the finance committees, but to just kind of get the broad general picture here today. So with that, keep that in mind and maybe make notes if you've got questions for when the various departments and the commissioner and others are before your finance committees. So with that, we'll get started. Commissioner Showalter.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. With me is Margaret Kelly, State Budget Director. We'll be presenting, for the most part, the slide deck that the governor and Commissioner Franz and I presented on the 22nd. We've added a couple of slides, deleted a couple of slides, but basically the framework is so that you get the same information that we presented then and can ask questions off of that. And we've augmented it a little bit so you got a little bit more specifics. That would be, I think, useful for this group. The presentation and the whole budget process is deceptively simple because, you know, in a handful of slides, you've got really months of many people's work distilled into one package. And how you put it together and what really came together is, I think, our first message here, which is it's a statement of priorities. That while there's a certain level of trying to balance a $1.1 billion deficit, and obviously that's the mathematical challenge that we have, that it was also a statement of what are the things that the governor stands for and helping reflect those values in his recommendations. And so you see the three things that he was really focused on. which was the growing the economy and to create jobs and expand the middle class. Second of all, to look at the tax system and look at fairness for all Minnesotans. And even as you're doing those two things, really a sweeping look at performance and value of state government services, and how do you manage towards greater value so that Minnesotans get the best dollar for all of their tax dollars, not just change items or something new. We got here, and I can go to the next slide right away, but it's basically, you know, a backdrop that you're all really familiar with is a series of deficits. So many that in some respects our psyche has been put in a position of expecting another deficit and trying to manage towards what is that technical fix that needs us, that can get us back to a balanced budget. In the past 11 legislative sessions, 9 of them have been presented by MMB or Department of Finance prior to that with a deficit forecast to resolve. And even today, with the growing economy, we're still looking at a $1.1 billion gap between revenues and spending obligations. And there's a number of different factors here. Some of it's obviously economic cycles. Some of it is also that over time we've gotten used to using one-time shifts or one-time resources to help plug the deficit, even as because the getting to the values or getting to the longer range, you know, objectives has been difficult. And so part of the governor's challenge to all of us was not only balance the budget, make investments in the places where we think are necessary for the state to go forward, but also do it in a way that's structurally sound and continuing. If you don't do that, what happens is pressure tends to leak out in other places. And this slide is just an example of property taxes. While they aren't directly controlled by the state, they can be through, you know, levy limits and things like that, but there's almost always some ability of county or city councils and commissioners to manage those rates. And what's happened as state money has stagnated, those costs increased, and typically those property taxes increased. So while it wasn't a direct tax increase, it was something that was seen as a pressure there. Similar phenomenons are seen in higher education. I think you're all very familiar with what's been going on with tuition, where in our four-year institutions, our two-year institutions, basically the tuition costs have continued to go up so that not by now a graduate of a four-year institution typically, on average, owes about $30,000 in debt. K-12 education, similar kind of phenomenon. Bottom line is, you know, how do you try to deal with those things? And that is, I think, the challenge that we all have going into this budget cycle. That $1.1 billion is a significant budget lift, but at the same time, it's probably not the critical one. The critical one is the demographic changes that we see going on every day, the economic changes that change our competitiveness nationally and worldwide, education and ability for future generations to come into the workforce. Those are the critical issues that we're trying to get at. And so, now within this framework, the governor sort of put down a number of key elements of how he wanted to build this budget, and that includes just building it on values, such as something that doesn't include one-time fixes, investing in the future so that early learning, K-12 education, job creation are part of a critical mix, looking at equity so that the tax system is at least no less progressive or less progressive than it currently is, reforming public services, and ultimately looking at the sustainability. So that's where we're at. And I'll turn it over to Margaret here in 1 second, but I want to highlight for this committee something that doesn't really leap out in the presentation, but certainly was a significant effort by the budget division and state agencies in putting together these recommendations, and that is focusing on results and trying to create a common language and a common framework of how do you measure results, when is it appropriate, what are the limitations and issues that you come to when you're assessing spending or managing spending on those metrics. And I look forward to that conversation spilling over into this legislative session and hopefully in future years continuing to build that culture around it, because really that is an objective here of looking at what we're buying, not just the cost of it, but really looking literally at what are the results and the systematic values, or systematic end-to-end value that spending provides. Does the system work? Does it get the public results that we want? And so with that, I will turn it over to Mark Kelly, State Budget Director, to walk through the next slides looking at some of the investments in the governor's budget.
Okay, Director Kelly, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm going to speak to the investments at a high level that the governor is making in his budget. First, in early education, so children are ready for school. In K-12 education, to ensure that our kids graduate from school. In higher education, so that college is affordable, and so students coming out of a 2 or 4 year program are trained for work that's out there waiting for them, and a growing economy that creates jobs. First, just the picture of what, and this is a bonus slide. There are a few slides we slipped in here to give you more context that are not in your handouts. I apologize for that, but these additional slides are on the MMB website. A big picture of where the governor is spending $37.8 billion, almost $38 billion of general fund resources, 41% in the K-12 area. If you add in higher education, that gets you almost to half of the state's general fund budget, 30% or almost a third in health and human services. That continues to be the way that the budget is split out. And in an all-funds perspective, a little over a $66 billion biennial budget, all funds taken into account. Over half of that is the general fund.
Do you happen to know offhand, I said no questions until you were done, but how that changes from current distribution? And then you can address that afterwards. I don't want to violate my own guideline for today.
Mr. Chair, I don't recall what the prior distribution was. I'll look that up and get back to you.
Yeah, fine. Thank you.
First, in terms of early education, the governor is investing significantly in early education, both in scholarships for parents to send their children to quality daycares and in rates over at the Department of Human Services to increase the rates we pay for child care in our state programs. And both of these are tied to the parent aware rating system that we will reimburse and provide incentives for daycares to be between 3, 4, and 5 stars on the parent aware quality rating system. And in addition to that, $7.4 will double the number of schools that receive mental health grants to put counselors and clinics into schools so that students can get mental health services in the schools. For our K-12 system, almost $300 million in our K-12 system between an optional all-day kindergarten program, $42 million, so that up to 85% of our students can have access to all-day K, $52 per student, a 1% increase on the formula, almost $159 million. In addition to that, it's increasing the formula for special education and providing some modest changes in both of those formulas to increase incentives to schools and to control costs and to provide greater equity among schools. And also a small investment in Minnesota Housing Finance Agency that will yield big results in terms of giving stable housing to students while they're going to school. In terms of our higher education system, almost $240 million investment in higher ed, $80 million in the state grant program, to increase the number of students who have access to the grant program and also to increase the value of that grant program itself to make college more affordable. And within our public colleges and universities, $80 million to MinSCU, and that will be focused on technology training and technical skills and apprenticeships and internships, so up to 10,000 students can have internships and apprenticeships so that they're ready for work when they're done with school. And also $80 million he has set aside for the U of M to make investments in research and development and to make investments to keep tuition down. And that allocation to the U of M is pending an outcome of an independent audit that I believe you all are working on as well. almost $100 million investment in growing our economy between the Minnesota Investment Fund to provide flexible financing to businesses to grow and expand in Minnesota. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund, which is similar to Job Z but changed slightly. It's now a competitive pay-for-performance incentive grants to encourage businesses to expand and grow here in Minnesota. And also $20 million in the Transportation Economic Development to pair infrastructure improvements with growing businesses to ensure that they can make the changes they need to expand in Minnesota, leveraging almost 10,000 jobs. Long-term investments in healthcare. Between Reform 2020 and the expansion of healthcare, we will leverage the Affordable Care Act to provide coverage to over 140,000 additional Minnesotans. And Reform 2020 will, within existing resources, try to begin bending the curve on some of our long-term care costs and addressing those demographic issues around the growing population being elderly and disabled. $40 million out of the Healthcare Access Fund to continue the statewide health improvement program. The SHIP, which is intended to encourage communities to have healthy behaviors that will address long-term healthcare costs. And the cigarette tax, in part for its public health benefits, 94-cent increase in the cigarette tax to reduce our smoking rates long-term. A few other slides here that are not in your pack to address, not in your packet. Investments in transportation. The governor is recommending a quarter-cent local sales tax increase in the seven-county metro area to address a long-term sustainable funding strategy for transit and leveraging federal dollars to provide additional road construction projects. In public safety, there are some core systems that the governor is recommending we update, ensure that we have the tracking and the history in our crime-based systems, and also the governor is recommending $38 million in Department of Corrections to ensure we have adequate staffing for safety within our prisons and for the staff who work there. And finally, in the environmental area, the governor is recommending additional general fund money for parks and trails, for invasive species, and for forestry. Finally, if you were to take a four-year look at the state budget, $2 billion worth of cuts were made in the 2011 session. And if you leverage those with additional forecast savings that we've seen since that time, and with the $1 billion of inflationary costs that agencies have absorbed, $5.1 billion of costs have been managed in this four-year time period. And then you add to that $1 billion of additional inflation in the 14-15 biennium that is not being addressed in this budget and agencies will absorb, and $225 million of reductions and reallocations within this budget as well. Governor's focusing on a leaner government, trying to make changes in small areas within this government to improve contracting, to simplify permitting and licensing and tax filing, all providing incentives for folks to control costs. Here's one example of what has happened in the past since 2011 in the healthcare area. More aggressive contracting and caps on rate of growth in our managed care contracts have generated almost $1 billion of savings in the budget that has been reflected in the forecast. I'm going to turn it back to Commissioner Showalter.
So, as you well know, there is an additional set of recommendations regarding the tax system to reduce property taxes, make the income tax system more progressive, update, broaden, and stabilize the sales tax, and ultimately level of the playing field for businesses by reducing some of the special exemptions and lowering the rate. I'm going to touch on and walk through a couple of these slides. I think it probably is appropriate to have the Department of Revenue in here for a more in-depth conversation of this, Mr. Chair, but I'd be happy to sort of walk through and at least give you sort of the top-level information from this budget for future discussions.
If you'd like to do that, our goal was to kind of focus on the spending side today because tomorrow the Tax Committee, I think, is going to have the Commissioner in to go over the tax details. Is that right, Representative Lenteski? Okay. So we'll try to focus on the spending side, but if you want to walk through those slides, go right ahead.
So maybe I just cut through to this slide, which gives you the numbers of the various net impacts in the 2014-15 package. That of the revenue changes, this basically shows you the tax revenue changes in the recommendations on the individual income tax, $1.129 billion. That's really the upper 2%. Fourth tier money. There aren't changes on other brackets. The sales tax, that's the net figure, right, reflecting the broadening of the sales tax base along with the reduction of the rate to 5.5%. Corporate income tax is pretty much a net, so that the elimination of FOCs and other things like that is basically used to lower the corporate income tax rate. The property tax relief is direct to citizens, so that every household receives up to a $500 rebate on property taxes paid. Cigarette and tobacco taxes, as Margaret said just earlier, a increase of, I believe, 94 cents on a pack of cigarettes, and then some minor other changes, totaling the $2.139 billion. It adds up, and I want to really point this out in how this adds up and balances the budget, because what it does is, without touching the reserves, without changing any of the shifts, it is able to resolve the $1.1 billion deficit, make the additional investments in our children, our students, in our higher education institutions and job creation programs, while balancing the budget. And so what you see here is on net about that $2.1 billion in revenue increases, about $1 billion increase in expenditures, netting out to enough to bring the budget into balance with a small $6 million on the bottom line for 2014 and 2015. When you're considering what the expenditure increase here is, it is roughly the same as if you would take the value of inflation on the 2014 and 15 expenditures. How we get there on the next slide just shows on a year-by-year basis that, based on the forecast, we had a much more significant gap in our revenues to expenditures in 2014 and 15, and that over time, because our forecast doesn't include discretionary inflation and because basically we are assuming a growing economy, those numbers started to get better over time. What the governor's recommendations do is close that gap even further in 2014 and 15, and enough so that by 2015 we can balance those 2 years together. In 2016 and 17, there's sufficient revenues over spending obligations that we can and would project to be able to pay down the remaining school shifts, so that by the end of 2016 and 17, we not only have a balanced budget, but we've eliminated those obligations. The governor's recommendations do not remove the forecast trigger, so hopefully we can do it faster. But bottom line is, it's not waiting for good forecasts. It's also making sure that we've got the wherewithal to take care of that obligation based upon our recommendations. So that is, you know, the long-range outlook for this budget. And I'll just conclude it by something the governor tells us all the time, which is, you know, this is the first word, that there are plenty of ideas and plenty of ideas on how to improve it. But he's putting out there a structure around some very key principles, really based upon the long-term viability and future of the state. Is how do we maintain our competitiveness and our workforce advantages? Because that's our primary advantage in keeping and developing businesses. And that really means making sure that all kids are ready to enter the workforce, that they are highly skilled, and that we are able to maintain that advantage going into the future. It's looking at our tax system, and as difficult as it is, looking at equities and simplification and following the, I think, time-honored path of base broadening and rate lowering, so that it doesn't pick as many winners and losers as it currently does. And then finally, just a constant investment and vigilance about how we spend our money as a state, so that we manage our state as well as possible. And it's not just, again, about increases or decreases, but are really about delivering something of value and of service so that our short-term costs not only are minimized, but our long-term costs are minimized. So with that, Mr. Chair, members, that concludes the presentation that we have here. We have some additional slides if you want to go through some more numbers. But, you know, certainly I would be happy to take any questions that you or the committee have. We could start, I think, with looking at a change in the pie chart that we had earlier in the slide. If you want to just pull that up, we can give you a couple of figures in the February forecast and on the fly.
Funds or general fund?
General fund. Because as of the February forecast in the 2012 and 13 biennium, K-12 education was 40.9%. The proposed recommendation is 41%. Health and Human Services was 31.9%. In the governor's recommendations, is 30.5%. Higher education in the forecast was 7.5%. In the recommendations, it's 7.4%. And property tax aids and credits in the forecast was 8.3% and drops to 7.5%. So most of these numbers are pretty, in terms of proportion of the budget, they're pretty similar. And I think probably the shift is probably the biggest explanation to some of the biennial changes between these numbers. But you wanted to know what they looked like. And so in general, the proportions are pretty similar.
Okay, thank you. You done then with the overview?
Yep.
Before we take questions, and we've got several on the list, let's approve the minutes for January 14th. Representative Kahn, do you want to make that motion? Okay, Representative Kahn moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Holbert, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you had asked about the change in the percentage of the budget. I happen to have those figures here. K-12, it's down 5.23%. Higher ed, up about 2%. Property tax aids and credits down almost 6%. Health and Human Service up a half a percent. Jobs up 7.3%. Energy down about 7%. Ag down 6.5%. Transportation up 13.5%, and there was a base reduction in that, so that's probably a little skewed because of that. Public safety down 4.2%, state government down 6%, debt up 212%. So those were how the percentage of the budget changed as a result of the governor's budget, where he moved his priorities around. But I have a couple questions on the page four.
On that first point, that sounds a little different than what the commissioner just presented. I guess I have a question. How was that? How are those numbers put together? And maybe the commissioner has a response.
My suspicion, Mr. Chair, is that the representative was looking at either biennial, but certainly changes from probably a base figure to a recommendation figure. And the numbers that I'm looking at are the pie chart that you have in front of you of percentage of the the whole general fund. So
right.
So it's just a different comparison biennial.
So
I wanted to clarify, Representative Folger, just what we're comparing here, because the numbers do sound differently.
Right. So in the 12-13 budget, K-12 was 43.23% of the total budget. And in the governor's proposed budget for the next biennium, that's at 40.97. Now we're going to see that change a little bit because of the February forecast and shift components. But that would be, as a share of the budget, down 5.23%. So it's how you divide the pie and how the changes of the size of the pieces, if you will, changed. But on page 14 of our handout, when you show, first of all, your heading on that box at the bottom of the page seems a little off because it says repays our schools, and that's actually doesn't happen until 16-17, but it looks like from my memory we raise all of this revenue and we actually reduce the amount. The budget is in the black in the out years. Under the November forecast, wasn't the budget surplus in around 270 million, and now we raise all this money and we've reduced the amount we're in the black in the out years. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yeah, it's actually on the table, and it's because we're adding a $1.1 billion of payback to those figures. So we're not only, you see on the table, the November forecast, it's on page 14 of the handouts, and I think it's the slide that's on the screen, which shows that in 2016 you have a balance of $29 million in the November forecast, rising to $234 million. But that's not nearly enough to pay back $1.1 billion. The governor basically manages the expenditures and the revenue lines to make sure that we have the ability to not only still fall in the black in the tails, but also be able to pay back that $1.1 billion. So that's why in 2016 it goes, you know, from $29 million structural to negative six. But right, we're also paying off $481 million in the process.
And in other words, your subtitle here, you should say, repays our schools in the next biennium, not 14, 15, if we are going to be completely accurate, I think. But do you have a listing, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, of all revenues and what the total raised, if you add up the CTIB sales tax expenditure and the Metro, all of the fees? My understanding is, in addition, for units of government that have local option sales tax, they would have additional revenue because of the expanded base. Is there somewhere that we might be able to find out what the total tax bill across all categories are in this proposed budget?
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I think probably the best document is the one that's pretty close, but it's the consolidated fund statement, so that way you could take a look across all funds, all sources, tax, non-tax, everything, put it together. You wouldn't pick up, I don't think you would pick up the local option or the local sales tax regarding the Met Council. On that, you'd have to add that in above and beyond that, but I think that view probably is the most complete and comprehensive that we've produced. And we're pretty close, but I don't think that's ready yet.
Consolidated,
Mr. Chair, that should be ready perhaps even as early as today.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, what my understanding is that the consolidated fund statement from the November forecast just came out on Friday, but we'll have a new one that will reflect all of the governor's budget proposals today. Is that?
Mr. Chair,
for the record,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We're getting good at it.
Okay, and Mr. Chair and Commissioner, as long as you're getting so good at stuff, how are we doing on our year-end statements that we received a letter in December? I think under law those should have been done by December 31st. We haven't seen them yet. Are we going to see those this week as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I'm almost certain you will not see them this week. It's certainly an area of significant work and effort for everyone who's, this is kind of inside baseball, but something called the CAFR. It's a comprehensive annual financial report. It shows all of the accounting work and basically summarizes all of the accounting system in a single document and produces it for the public. Because of the systems conversions, because of the changes in reporting tools that went with it, that has been running behind. The letter Representative Holberg mentioned was something that went out under my signature to let people know that it was going to take longer. That is still the case. We are moving ahead on that. I think was testimony in a joint committee just the other day. Senator Rest's committee on audits, we testified in detail about that just the other day, and we expect to be bringing that to conclusion pretty soon, but it won't be this week. Once we conclude our work, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, as usual, will take a look at those documents, audit them, and provide audited statements.
And
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, my understanding is that the bond houses view these as important documents in order to rate the fiscal health of the state. Have you had any communication with them? Have they reacted to this delay in this information at all?
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, of course we did. And we made that communication both formally and informally to the bond houses, and no, they appreciated the heads up, the understanding of where we're at. This situation is not at all unusual for states that are doing a significant systems conversion, so it is not unknown to them. And we made sure that all investors in the state's debt also have access to that information so that there are no surprises or covenant issues.
And if I just might, if you know, is this the first time since this law was enacted that it hasn't been complied with?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know for sure. You may know better than I. I know as in my tenure, this hasn't happened. We have a long history of producing these on time. So this is not an insignificant issue internally, but I don't think it is an external issue with the bond houses or anybody else for that matter.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Showalter, I noticed particularly with the example of the cigarette tax, you started on something that not only collects taxes but also influences harmful behavior. Mm-hmm. And there are two other taxes I'd like to ask you about if you did any consideration of that. One is the liquor tax, which has hardly been changed since the 80s, I think, mm-hmm. and in terms of the deleterious effect that excess liquor consumption gives, it's probably as high as tobacco. And then another one, which I've just come up with, is the state of Washington has a hazardous substance tax, and and that was actually approved by voters in Washington, but it's a 0.7% tax, and it raises $125 million a year from oil products, pesticides, and other chemicals, and it's used for environmental cleanup. Is your administration looking at anything like that, or should we probe you to look at it, or what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, certainly in the process of creating the budget, there were a number of conversations leading to the governor's recommendations. There were discussions about, at one level, about most everything. I'm not familiar with the hazardous substance tax that you referred to. Certainly I'm familiar with the liquor tax. Bottom line here is a couple of considerations. One, that really there is a very strong linkage and pretty well-documented linkage between long-term health behaviors and cigarette smoking, and particularly the efforts of the industry to get children onto cigarettes, and that this has a very well-documented impact. Second is the governor was very cognizant of the progressivity of his recommendations and wanted to make sure that in managing the tax package, that ultimately it ended up being a progressive package. And he is, I think, would be very quick to point out, he's not a big fan of the cigarette tax either, but ultimately, you know, recommended it because of, you know, some of those health issues.
Well, Representative Kahn.
You know, I just don't know if you looked at that and eliminated it, but the issues on liquor, I think, are almost as strong as they are on cigarettes. I was talking with one of my constituents who works in a restorative justice program, and the issues of liquor on our criminal justice system expense is just, you know, absolutely incredible. And I know we're talking about the fact that taxes on cigarettes and liquor are regressive taxes in terms of consumption profiles, but I think the way to look at them is that they become then an even more progressive effect on health issues if they end up changing the behavior at those levels. And I was surprised. I guess I looked at one thing with Representative Benson, I guess, brought it to me in the first place, at using a very small tax on liquor to fund the stadium, which would have been much more reliable and brought in much more money than the regressive tax on gambling that we put in. And I immediately, we were both supposed to collect 35 names to bring that in as an amendment. I did it in the matter of 2 days. I was doing Democrats, he was doing Republicans. I did it in about 2 days, and then he came back to me and said leadership told him he couldn't go ahead and do it because it was a tax increase. So, but, you know, the thought of a very small, particularly if you're applying it statewide, very small tax that I don't think anybody would notice, Just an incident is that I remember when we did the tax on restaurant consumption in Minneapolis to pay for the Target Center, and I can't imagine that I am the dumbest fiscal person in the city of Minneapolis, but I do, and of course I knew that we had done that, you know, because I had voted for it or against it, don't remember exactly what, but the, you know, but it took, but I didn't know when it took effect. So at some point I looked at a restaurant bill to see if it was on it, and it had taken effect for 6 months. And if it took me 6 months to see that without any effect on our behavior and dining out, or except whether I looked at the bill or not, was, you know, it just seems to me that those things are invisible to the population, and we really ought to be doing them.
Okay, we've got quite a list. I think that was more a comment than...
No, it was, had you...
Did you want to strip them?
The question was, he sort of gave it, wasn't satisfactory. It was, had you considered them and why not, was the answer. So I'm just leaving it as a question
Mr.
out
Chair,
there.
Representative, yes.
Okay. Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I just had a clarification. Folks back home have the misunderstanding, or I guess misinterpretation, that the $500 property tax refund check will be $500. You mentioned up to, so I just want to clarify which is correct. It'll be up to, not $500.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is up to $500 or the amount of property tax paid. So if you're in a homestead that property taxes aren't that much, then in fact you wouldn't get more back than you paid in property taxes.
All right, thank you.
And let's see, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues, if I could. The first one is the slide that says growing economy that creates jobs. Last year, we got into a little trouble because there was a fund like that that was applied later. It was not clear what that fund was going to get us. I think that whole issue of when you establish funds like that for the whole state to feel somehow that it's transparent and fair. And so I guess the challenge for us on this slide will be, how do we make this transparent and fair so that it's clear before we enact it, what does it get us? In the case of HEPR, we can pass out lists that show exactly what projects will be done. In the case of local bridges and wastewater infrastructure, the department has before the fact very specific lists because there's something going through the process. I don't know if you're far enough along to know, will those be able to be lists before we fund so we know something about what it gets us before the fact?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the purpose of this fund is to give the Commissioner of Deed a toolbox, so to speak, to leverage and create flexible financing strategies for businesses to encourage them to expand in Minnesota or relocate in Minnesota. And so what the Commissioner could tell you is how these funds have been used in the past, or with what sorts of projects these funds would have been useful in the past, and where she is thinking that they may be useful going forward. But having an actual list probably would be more challenging, since it's something that she uses prospectively. And she may have an idea. I'm not sure she would actually have a complete list the way some of those other projects are all teed up and ready to go.
Right. I absolutely understand that. That's exactly why I raise it. In all of these others, we've come to expect that they're going to be able to do some advanced planning. In these, we've tended not to. And particularly, I think, where it says businesses relocating in Minnesota, you have the feeling that, does this mean we're going to establish a fund that's going to help businesses move around in the state, in which case it's hard to understand how that will grow the economy. So to me, the most problematic of that slide is knowing before the fact what it will get us. I absolutely understand what you're saying. That's how we've done it before. But it doesn't help us be motivated to know what we're going to get for that money.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it would be best to speak directly with
The commissioner.
She should come before the committee.
You know, I think she has an idea of and can give you examples, but clearly for businesses relocating, it's businesses outside of Minnesota coming in to Minnesota. It's not to create a pot of money for communities to compete against each other.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative, if I could just add in, I think that's exactly right. And it's a valid sort of, I think, difference in opinions, and it's something we should look at, but because this notion is to respond to things that may happen in the next 2 years that neither of us know about yet. Unlike a HEPA project, which takes some time in developing the plans and fits into the infrastructure, this is a question of a business making a relocation move or expansion move that usually, you know, the lead time is pretty short. Is the state prepared to offer incentives or offer abilities to change the infrastructure to land those jobs? That's the question.
And Mr. Chair, I totally get that answer. That's how we've done it traditionally. I just think it's one of those areas where, if we're putting even more money in, those questions become more important. And then if I could just for a minute put my hat on that represents Metro taxpayers. A question about, throughout you have a principle that we absolutely all would agree with, and that is a tax system that is fair to all. In the case of the 7-county metro area folks, there's a 7-county, and then there's a smaller area called the Transit Taxing District. And for years, that group has paid property taxes to support the transit system in the 7-county metro area. Arguably, that transit system has certainly gone outside of the transit taxing district, and yet it's imposed over it. Then we imposed a sales tax just on 5 counties that was going to build out the system. And now this year, we're proposing yet again to increase that. So now we've layered on 3. And what feels like less state funding and more local funding for what we all seem to say is a very vital piece of building our state's economy, an infrastructure that is essential and that the business community now is saying we should do more of and faster. And so that one confuses me a little bit. And then I think just to layer on that $500 property tax rebate, you just indicated some people in the state perhaps pay even less than that in property taxes. So let's say somebody pays $900 a year in property taxes would get $500, but someone who pays thousands, and I would venture to guess that's virtually every one of my constituents, would get $500. So help me understand for a metro taxpayer how what we're proposing gets us to a tax system that is fair to all.
Mr. Chair, I'll try
Mr.
to
Showalter, on the tax issue, we're going to be getting more into that tomorrow, and that was one conversation the commissioner and I had. He said that wasn't necessarily his total expertise, although he has some general knowledge. So on any of those questions, if you want to defer them to the tax committee, feel free. If it's something you think you can handle, go ahead.
I would almost entirely think about the last slide we showed, which is a puzzle. And one of the phrase there was, first of all, to your transportation point, you know, the governor's recommendations aren't the final word, and I think you're pointing out issues and considerations that really need to be considered about the governance structure for Metro Transit. Very well taken points, and we expect to have more conversation and discussion about how these things can fit together. The puzzle piece is also, I think, important here on the tax question, because any one element of the tax package may look more fair or less fair to an individual area, type of taxpayer, household. In this instance, the rebate of $500 is intended to be a progressive tool to help bring down the cost of property taxes. But you're right, it has different effects depending on where you are at in the state. Overall package, the overall tax package for the governor is slightly progressive. It certainly inches the taxes more towards a ability to pay basis, and that's the notion of all of these pieces fitting together so that you have to look at them all in totality. I would prefer to go, before going into any furthers, just to go back to the Commissioner of Revenue, and I think we could talk about each of those pieces and the incidence of each of those elements.
And I suspect Representative Marquardt is going to have a good discussion of some of those issues in his division. Not sure when you're starting, but probably tomorrow.
Representative Davney, excuse me.
That's right. I forget the change from time to time. Yeah, Representative Davney is going to be. How can I forget that? I'm on that division.
Mr. Chair? Okay.
You were. Trouble here today before it's over one way or the other.
Can I ask a really quick question about this graphic? Just real quick.
Okay, real quick, because we got about.
Just really quick. It's my understanding that the property tax is only about 5% of the state budget, so you're including in your little leg all of local property tax. Do you include local sales tax on the sales tax leg?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, I'm not sure. I don't know that local sales tax is a huge figure, but I'm not sure the derivation of the detailed sales tax figure. We can check it out for you for sure. What this mostly is intended to convey is that our policy orientation has typically been to make sure our revenues manage risk by taxing different types in different ways so that we're not too susceptible to the ups and downs of the economy. But we can get the more detailed numbers because the Department of Revenue has those figures.
Thank you.
Okay. We've got 12 people on the list so far, so just if people can be relatively brief so we can try to get through in the next half hour, a little better than a half hour, everyone that's on the list. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either Commissioner Showalter or Director Kelly, I'm curious, the Lands and Minerals Division in DNR has like a $4 million cut to their budget. About 80% of their general fund budget is reduced. So would that be part of the governor's $225 million of cuts? Is that how that's measured? Any cut that shows on this sheet would be part of the $225
million? Mr. Chair, Representative, the governor's budget includes about $4 million within the Department of Natural Resources budget of general fund spending that is shifted on to other funds so that it frees up those general fund dollars to make it available for their forestry program and their parks and trails program. An overall reduction compared to the previous biennium happened in the 2011 budget where they were reduced, and the governor partially restores that but does not fully restore that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but Director Kelly, I was wondering if that $4 million is part of the $225 million of cuts.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the $4 million that's reallocated is a part of the $225. It's a combination of reductions and reallocations.
Okay, so Director Kelly, if I understand, the $4 million that was a general fund appropriation of lands and minerals, that's now $2 million back charged to other divisions, and $1 million increase in permit to mine fees is actually counted as a cut? You're not serious. I mean, how much of the rest of the 225 is not a cut and is a reallocation? Are we really telling the people of Minnesota that that's a $4 million cut? That's a zero cut.
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the 225 refers to both reductions and reallocations that the governor made in this budget on the general fund. And so with the idea being that he asked all his commissioners to reprioritize funding on the general fund, and are there better uses for his general fund dollars? And so there were reductions made within human services, within environment, that is using those general fund dollars differently.
Well, Director Kelly, have you read the paper or watched TV in the last 6 days? There's $225 million worth of cuts. I want to know how many really are cuts and how many are a camouflage. You're telling me this $4 million is not a cut, not at all. It's a reallocation. $2 million is actually still paid by the DNR. We're going to backcharge another division for the same thing. And the other one is we're going to increase the permit to mine fee. Basically, it's almost the whole $4 million. You're saying you're not serious. It shows up as a cut, and it's not a cut at all. Is any of the $4 million really a reduction? Is the whole $225 a reallocation? So when we talk about $16 worth of new revenue for each dollar of cuts, is it really $16 in new revenue for zero cuts?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a wonderful discussion, and certainly the detailed backup of the $225 million is available. I'm sure your fiscal staff in each of the committees is looking at that. Bottom line is, as we've talked about it all along, it is cuts and reallocations. And the point here is that it isn't just whatever you had before is what you continue to get, and then it's just add on top of it. It's a question of managing and trying to put the money in the right place, or at least in the most effective place. And that's one example. It's not a cut, but we're not also saying that $225 million is cuts. It's cuts and reallocations, as the slide in front of you suggests. It says right there. So the whole list is available, and to your question of is it all just reallocations or pushing on to other funds, the answer is absolutely not. But it is a whole lot of different things. There's only a couple of really large items in Health and Human Services, and certainly as we get into committee, you're going to see different changes here and there that lead up to that total number.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. But, Commissioner, if you talk to somebody in the real world and tell them that you're reallocating or cutting, I don't think that's the same as back charging. This is Lands and Minerals sending a bill to the other divisions for the work they do. That's not a reallocation. Reallocation is saying, you know what, we have too many people over here, we need to move you to another division where we have some work to do. This is back charging a paper charge, and you're calling it a cut. I'd like to really know, I hope you will tell us, how much is real, true reallocation and cuts, and how much is a paper shuffle? This is, I hope the whole budget isn't just what I've seen so far in the DNR. I hope there is some real truth in it, because that's extremely misleading. Because for the last 6 days, I've heard in the public that there's $225 million worth of cuts. And in my little area, I don't see any of it.
And Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, is certainly happy to provide more detail. I think the key thing in the environmental area is with so many different funds, so many different activities, each being segregated, it is always going to be that kind of question of who's got what. We're trying to manage across funds, trying to manage towards value, and you know, in the end, the summary numbers are the summary numbers. We can and will take a look at those details in your committee and other committees as well.
Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Oh, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to follow up on Representative Kahn's question. You have done a detailed analysis of how much cigarettes cost the state. Have you done a similar analysis of how much alcohol costs the state? And I would look at the court system and the hospital system and drug treatment. So what alcohol is actually costing taxpayers? Have you all made that analysis?
Mr. Chair, Representative, neither of us have. We would expect that the Department of Health might have such an analysis. I don't have that kind of information here.
Well, for part of it is the court system, and that would be a huge part of the court system deals with alcohol. I mean, it's the basis of why we have so many court cases. It seems to me that it would be important that you find out from health, find out from the courts, what alcohol is really costing us, because it could be that we as general taxpayers are subsidizing the alcohol industry, and that would not be right. So just as we have analyzed cigarettes, we need to do that analysis, and we should get it done before we have to talk about the full budget again.
Maybe we can get that information from someplace. I was just going to comment. I've twice been on jury duty, and case after case after case, when they were impaneling the jury, was alcohol-related cases of one type or another. Were you done, Representative Wagenius?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Commissioner and Director Kelly, for being here. Let's see, I have a couple of specific questions and then a little more general, so I'll just ask a more specific one first. Just a question on the additional quarter cent sales tax in the metro area for transit. Is that solely for building new projects and continued operating funds? You know, generally these run at a bit of a deficit, come out of the general fund. Is that continued to be the assumption, or would that additional money go to pay for operating?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the quarter cent, Met Council has a plan, and I would recommend you speak specifically with the Met Council, but it's to cover the operating costs of the existing North Star and of the soon-to-be-started Central Corridor, and it's to cover construction costs for new lines, specifically Southwest Corridor.
Rep. Sevillon.
Thank you. So I think if I heard you correctly, it's not to replace all of the money that's currently coming out of the general fund for operating, but maybe some.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a general fund reduction associated with that, that it's about a $40 million reduction in current general fund dollars going towards operating costs down at Met Council. I believe what would be left on the general fund is Metro Mobility.
Thank you. And so moving into another area, education, looking at the plans for the shift payback move to the tails or the out years, it's my understanding that there is an additional cost or an additional debt that accrues if this, you know, for the period of time that payback of the shift is delayed, and it's something to do with the property tax recognition portion, which I don't completely understand. So if you could, you know, confirm for me that there is, you know, I heard something around $150 million that actually will be added to the shift, you know, for the period of time before it's paid back. And if you could explain that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll take a shot. You have Bill Marks here as well, and I'm sure he could walk you through this. My knowledge is that the property tax recognition shift doesn't necessarily change so much. What happens is, though, that the change in the underlying school costs or the property taxes means that over time the value of that split between state and second year settle up may change over time. So as you have more students, the cost of the aid payment shift changes. I'm guessing that there may be some property tax issue as well as that changes over time. It's not necessarily like it's just that the value of that shift changes each year as the split between those two numbers moves. It's not an eloquent explanation, Mr. Chair. If anybody else would like to go further, you're welcome to.
That's maybe one that we can get back to.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Marks didn't have anything readily available either at this point.
Mr. Chair, the cost of increase, because we're increasing funding for K-12 education, the cost of paying back the shift increases. So currently, under the November forecast, we owe our schools $1.1 billion. Given the governor's budget, that increases funding for K-12 education. When we actually pay back that shift, we'll pay back $1.2 billion because the amount that is being shifted into future years grows by the amount that we're investing in education. I mean, it's not proportional. But
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Director Kelly. So, again, if I'm hearing you correctly, the longer we take to pay it back, the more we'll be paying.
Mr. Chair and Representative, only if we continue to increase funding for education.
Yeah.
Thank you. And one additional question, if I may, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Showalter, I'm trying to remember from the briefing on the November forecast, so if you could refresh me on what the growth rate is projected to be for our economy for the coming biennium.
Showalter?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure. The growth rate, I'm assuming it's a 2-3% range, but I would have to look it up to be sure.
Okay, well, that was generally my recollection, and I guess I'm wondering about plans to increase our state spending by 7.6%, or, you know, I like round figures, 8%, with continued growth rates that fall below that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, can you comment on plans for making this sustainable? Obviously, the governor's put out a pretty bold plan here that, you know, increases spending in certain areas or investments, however you want to term it, with tax increases. But if we continue to spend beyond where our economy grows, we're going to be back in a similar problem here very soon. So am I reading something wrong here? It sounds like we're spending more than we are actually growing as an economy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a good point. And I think that is the underlying worry of the governor and all of us in preparing this budget, is how do you slow down the and match over long term the spending and the revenues of the state. And it's not too hard to look at the trends, and it's pretty much healthcare, to a lesser extent K-12. And the sustainability of this budget or any other budget is going to circle around our ability to have strategies that slow down the cost of growth of healthcare. You saw in the little chart that we had on the screen before, it's 30% of the budget roughly, it used to be 20%. It keeps on going up, and it keeps on going up significantly faster than anything else in the budget. And that is why, the governor has been trying to explore the health insurance exchange. That's why he's got the 2020 initiative. That's why he's got the DHS people negotiating hard with managed care companies to try and bring down the costs. Those are the things that he's trying to do, and frankly, it's one of those things that all hands on deck, because that is a critical element for the state budget and obviously for the federal one, too.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and thanks, Mr. Chair. I have more questions, but I know others are on the list, so I'll suspend for now.
We have quite a list. Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, building on Representative Connie, now Representative Venus's question, so I won't take a long time, but I do want to tell you that I had a hearing in Representative Smith's Judiciary Committee on the whole impact of alcohol tax, increasing the alcohol tax. And I have a bill for you that does split the costs, split the dedication to both pay for health care costs, disproportionate health care costs, and judiciary costs. And we're glad to talk with you about it. And I can give you all those numbers. They've been deeply researched. It's nothing new. A lot of numbers about how much this costs our state. So I'd be glad to talk with you if you can just tell me who I should talk with first. I just want to say, the impact is disproportionate also on low-income communities and communities of color who don't happen to have health insurance or can pay for good lawyers. So we have, really strong reasons. You're talking about reducing health care costs, prevention of some of the issues around alcoholism and drug addiction can be really savers of the health care budget. So just wanted to give you that information. Please tell me who to talk with, and I'll be glad to help move along.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you, and we can certainly talk after the meeting.
Okay, let's see, Representative Woodward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I'll keep my, I've got quite a few questions as well, but I'll limit them to the K-12 education finance piece of this. And we're looking at $3.7 billion in increased taxes, and you said that this is a statement of the governor's priorities, yet we're not paying back the shift in the first biennium. So let me just ask you a direct question. Is the shift, is that a gimmick, that is against an honest, transparent budget, or is it a tool in the toolbox?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, the shift is something I don't think that anybody is all that excited to use, and we've certainly used it in the downturns to try and balance up the budget. I think it's a fiscal imperative of the state to pay it back so that it is something that both schools have some predictability about what they're going to be getting, and also the state, frankly, has the ability to have some financial flexibility if bad times come again. It's competing with a $1.1 billion deficit, and we've got to crawl out of that gap first before we can pay back the shift. And that's sort of the sequencing that this budget sets up. We make sure we can deal with the $1.1 billion deficit and then move on and pay off the shift. It is something that we need to take an address, but it is not in the current biennium or the 14 and 15 plan for the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a follow-up question on that. So I'm assuming you didn't directly say this, but you didn't say it was a gimmick. So I assume it's a tool in the toolbox. So what assurances do we have by pushing this off into a new biennium? We'll certainly have a new legislature. We may have a new governor. How is that? What assurances do we have that's not a tool in the toolbox, just not to pay that one back either, as opposed to a gimmick and an open and honest budget?
Mr. Chair, yes, I'm trying not to use the word gimmick, and because it is, it is a issue that I think everyone has dealt with, and the critical thing from a financial perspective is making sure that we manage sustainably over the 4-year period, that we have ongoing revenues, match our ongoing obligations, and I think right now the issue is we've got a forecast trigger that will repay the shift if we're lucky, but if we're not lucky, we've got a plan in place to make sure we can get to it.
And Mr. Chair, just one quick follow-up then. I know that other people have lots of questions here, but based on that, I would argue that it's really not competing against a $1.1 billion deficit. It's competing against $3.7 billion in increased revenue. And so that's the competition. That's the priority that we have to set. And if it's not a priority, it's not a priority by the governor, and we're going to kick the can down the road into the next biennium. But along those same lines, when we're spending the money we are on K-12 education, and you talked about what we're getting, the value we're getting for these increases in spending, does this K-12 budget address the inequity in education funding, per pupil funding, between greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities?
Mr. Chair, Representative, great question. We talked about it long and hard. Some of the recommendations from the study group is what I'm hearing from that question, to take a look at the equalization and really the disparities in funding between districts. It's a huge issue. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get to that issue. In the end, there are some elements of some simplifications of formulas. Director Kelly can go into this further if you want, but bottom line is the cost of those recommendations were more than $500 million, $600 million sticks in my mind. That was not achievable within the trade-offs that we had in this budget. It is something I think the Governor, Commissioner Casilius, have and will continue to talk about, something that we need to continue looking at. We do not have a comprehensive strategy at this point, simply because of the trade-offs in funding were so significant to hold people harmless, it was going to have a huge cost.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have two kind of comments. One, the cigarette tax is a hugely regressive tax to the poor, because the poor predominantly smoke. And I've rarely seen a poor person buy a 15 or 16 or 17 bottle of wine that they can get four glasses out of. So I really don't have a lot of empathy for people who buy pricey wines and then complain about, oh, somebody's having a cigarette in the park 100 yards from me, and we should really take care of that. It's a little condescending. But just ask how I really feel about it. The other is to my colleague, Representative Hausman's ideas of the Job Creation Fund. That will be addressed in the Jobs Committee as we go forward. They're coming in front of us, like I'm sure education is coming in front of education, jobs is coming in front of jobs, a variety of others. But just for everyone to understand that even with these numbers, at $86 million, we do not match the taking out the monies that are spent on workforce in all states and in the state of Minnesota. We are not even half of what other states spend on job development. Over the last 14 years, they have taken over $1 billion out of job creation. I want to commend the governor for making an attempt to rectify that. Mm-hmm. But again, you are not even at three quarters of what our closest competitor does. And the Job Creation Fund, many states around us just hand out $1 million check to buy the companies from the state of Minnesota to come move to Wisconsin or Iowa. We have never handed out $1 million check. So I hope to take a look at it in my committee, but I do want all to be checked. So I hope to take a look at it in my committee, but I do want all the people in this legislature and this state to understand that we are absolutely cheap when it comes to try and getting jobs in this state. We have invested in education and workforce training and not the other.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney. I absolutely thank you for that, because it is a big question of competitiveness. And what the governor tries to balance is some of those short-term competitiveness opportunities of job recruitment along with the sort of longer-term core competency of the state, which is the workforce, and making sure we invest in both.
We've got six more people in just a little over 10 minutes, so if we can move rather rapidly so everybody at least gets their question on the table. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Chairman Carlson and Commissioner Showalter. Thank you for appearing before us and for doing a difficult job. It always is. Every year, it doesn't matter who it is. It's a difficult, difficult job. I understand that. And I just want to ask a very a brief question, and it's not it's not really on a lot of the details and specifics, which I would have liked to have had time to ask about. But it's about the governor's number one priority listed here, and it says a growing economy that creates jobs and expands the middle class. Many of the people who look at this budget say it's a job killer, that we're raising taxes, on more people that purchase more things, making it more difficult for families and small businesses to purchase things, making it more difficult for small businesses and large to compete with places like North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, that have governors that are lowering taxes and trying to make it more competitive. And many of us would argue taking jobs that are from Minnesota and moving it there. This budget looks to many of us like it's a good deal for government, like it's a good deal for bureaucracy, but it's a bad deal for small business, and it's a bad deal for the private economy. Question is real simple. Have we really looked at how many jobs this is going to kill in the private economy in the state of Minnesota? Does the governor have a concept for that? Does he have a vision for competitive businesses with the governors that surround him? And does he think about that? Did he measure that? And did he ask you to look at it?
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a great question, and really that is the core. I think that the core question for the legislature and the governor's budget has been, how does the state sustain or expand its competitiveness and its economy going into the future? And, you know, there's going to be ideology, there's going to be numbers, there's certainly lots of discussion about what is the place and the positioning of the state. Since we have limited time, I just want to address that what we have heard over and over about the competitiveness advantage that the state has is its fabulous workforce, its ability to respond with well-trained individuals to help jobs grow. On a cost basis, you know, there's always going to be the question of exporting and sort of sizing some activities to other states. But really, you know, Minnesota has been growing faster than those surrounding states, in partly because of our core strategy. So, yeah, it's a difficult trade-off of some of the business-to-business taxes, the sales tax broadening, along with the rate reduction, so that we have a lower tax rate, broader base. And the question is that, along with the benefit, is that worth it with the benefit of investments and ability to have a better workforce? And that's the core question. The governor did think about that long and hard and came up with this recommendation. As difficult as it is, I think it points us in a direction of having that workforce there for the future. But understand, we'll be talking with the business community, have been talking with the business community before the budget, and we'll continue to do so throughout the session.
Okay. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is much narrower question than a lot of these. In the tax on clothing, how much are we going to get from that? Because my understanding is that the Main Street bill in Congress is going to follow the streamlined sales tax compact, which will, the tax on clothing will throw us off of, so we can't tax all the internet stuff, which is over $200 million right now, and the prognosis is that that's going to be huge in the future, whereas I would guess tax on clothing isn't going to accelerate anywhere as near at the rate that will. So are we really, from the long run, are we not ending up in the hole on that trade-off?
Commissioner Showalter, and again, members, we don't have the Commissioner of Revenue here, so yeah, whatever your comfort level is.
Thank you, because I don't know the answer. I'm not sure. I don't think it pales, I think, in comparison with the Main Street sales tax on the internet sales. That's contemplated at the federal level, but obviously we didn't include that revenue in the governor's budget. We can't. It's a congressional issue, and we can get you the detail about what the clothing sales tax above $100 would generate, but I don't think it's that kind of money.
I think the thing that's become clear this morning is how interwoven the expenditures and tax questions are, as members have asked. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Commissioner Showalter, I know last week I had asked you to give me a listing of kind of the fee increases that you have. I know you mentioned to me that fees are going to increase by 45%. I've read some articles here, and you can see that if you have a baby, you're going to have fees increase on you there. So with the newborn screening fee increase, that's part of that. And I know that's, you know, a tough thing, and I think in the tax committee I'll be asking you some more detailed questions of what's going to be taxed and what's not taxed. Hopefully the Commissioner Franz can talk about that. But I don't want to talk too much about the fee part, although it is important. I'd like to get that list from you. If you could get that to me today, that would be wonderful, because I think it plays into what Representative McNamara had mentioned. But I am interested in knowing how many government jobs are we growing here. I noticed that the trade office, we're going to go from one foreign trade office to three foreign trade offices. And I'm curious as to what is the full-time equivalent positions that we're going to be adding to government, and if you can get me that list. If you don't have it with you today, I'd be interested in having it this week.
Sure. Mr. Chair, thank you. And as I think we talked briefly, the consolidated fund statement, I think, is going to be the complete statement of all the different fees and changes. And so when we produce that, we'll make sure that you have that. And we'll need to follow up with you on the FTEs. There is, within the budget system, we can run a report just so you can see on an agency-by-agency basis what's being proposed.
Okay, Representative Gunther. He's off. Oh, okay.
I decided, we'll, in deference to time.
You took your name off. Okay, thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my same question that Representative Anderson had presented about the FTEs by department.
Then our last question, and then we'll adjourn, is Representative Kahn. You have indicated you had another question.
Yes, and that was the just the relationship of renter's credit to property, renter's credit to property tax relief. How is that being considered in?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, there are no changes to the renter's credit in the governor's budget, so it is, I think, holding a current law, if memory serves. So it is not included as part of the calculation on the property tax.
And as I remember, Mr. Chairman, did current law cut it back from what it was? I'm getting nods.
He's getting a nod. And
okay,
yes,
well, I just
not sure what it's at.
Like to add that to the list of things that should be restored.
Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Chair, because there are obviously issues that you're going to want to take a look at, and you know, hopefully improvements to the governor's package. But it is a package with lots of interrelationships. And thank you for giving us the chance to give you a broad overview.
I have a couple of procedural questions, Mr. Showalter. You know, under the House rules, there's a timeline, 15 days, for the governor's bills to be introduced. And how is that looking in terms of getting those bills ready?
Mr. Chair, agencies are working on that right now. That's been, you know, a part of our communication as well. Once we get that budget out, to start getting that legislation together. So as it comes together, we will be in touch with you very quickly.
And for members, what that's about, if you've looked at the rules, if they come in after 15 days after the budget, then they have to go to the Rules Committee for re-referral. Just another step in the process. So to the degree that that can be done in a timely manner, that helps the House procedures overall. And just for the benefit of a few people that may have arrived late, we talked a little bit about change orders at the beginning, and this is mainly for the just about everybody's either a chair or a lead on the committee, but we will address change orders only if we have the commissioner's signature, is basically what the understanding is. And just want to repeat that. Sometimes others will say, well, we've got a change order here, and it's not official unless it goes through MMB, just so everybody understands that. Well, with that, thank you very much.
If I might, today you were clear with the committee that you didn't want to focus on the revenue side of the governor's budget. It is the Ways and Means Committee. The majority of us are not on the tax committee. What's your intent as far as are we going to have another hearing where we can bring in the commissioner and talk about some of these issues in the budget and whether or not it's a real cut or a backfill, and or is this the last time we're going to see the governor's budget in its entirety, and we need to wait till we see the omnibus bills, or?
Let me check with the commissioner. The tax committee is going to begin tomorrow, and the tax chair is still in the room. So let's see how that's progressing, and you know, we do have to have as much information as possible when we get to that point of setting the budget resolution.
And then,
so as I mentioned, a lot of it's interwoven, but there'll be a fair amount of publicity, I think, when the tax committee gets started on this. But the commissioner did indicate that he wanted to come in at some point. I thought the schedule today was going to be plenty full with just the commissioner of MMB, and so that's where we left it. But we can talk further.
And then, if I might, one other quick question. Have you prepared a timeline for targets?
Have I prepared a timeline for targets?
For budget targets?
We're going to begin that discussion, but the timeline is set by rule when we get the February forecast, which will come out early in March. At that point, shortly thereafter, we have to, by rule, we have up to 25 days. And from my perspective, the sooner the better.
All right. Thank you.
To give the committee chairs an opportunity to work on their budgets. Okay, with that, meeting adjourned.